Hello, I'm Dave Isay, creator of StoryCorps, a national project to record America's stories in sound. The idea behind StoryCorps is simple. We build comfortable, soundproof booths where you can bring your grandmother, your aunt, a friend, anyone you choose to conduct a 40-minute interview with the help of a trained facilitator. You walk away with a broadcast-quality CD of the session, and with your permission, a second copy goes to the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress, where it will become part of an oral history of America. StoryCorps launched in October 2003 with a recording booth in New York City's Grand Central Terminal. Now we're taking the project national. StoryCorps' two mobile recording booths are touring the country, collecting the stories of everyday people across America. In a moment, a short history of StoryCorps, but first, a recent interview recorded in our flagship Grand Central booth. Listen as horse betting clerk Danny Perasa and his wife Annie reminisce about their first date more than 25 years ago.
She started to talk, and I said, listen, I'm going to deliver a speech. I said, at the end, you're going to want to go home. I said, you represent a 34-letter word. I said, that word is love. I said, if we're going anywhere, we're going down the aisle because I'm too tired, too sick, and too sore to do any other damn thing. And she turned around, and she said, well, of course I'll marry you. And the next morning, I called her as early as I possibly could.
And he always gets up early.
to make sure she hadn't changed her mind, and she hadn't. And every year on April 22nd, around 3 o'clock, I call her and ask her if it was today, would she do it again? And so far, the answer's been the same.
Yeah, 25 times yes.
you see, the thing of it is, I always feel guilty when I say I love you to you, and I say it so often. I say it to remind you that as dumpy as I am, it's coming from me. It's like hearing a beautiful song from a busted old radio. And it's nice of you to keep the radio around the house.
If I don't have a note on the kitchen table, I think there's something wrong. You write a love letter to me every morning.
Well, the only thing that could possibly be wrong is I couldn't find a silly pen.
To my princess, the weather out today is extremely rainy. I'll call you at 11:20 in the morning.
It's a romantic weather
and
report.
And I love you, I love you, I love you.
When a guy is happily married, no matter what happens at work, no matter what happens in the rest of the day, there's a shelter when you get home. There's a knowledge, knowing that you can hug somebody without them throwing you downstairs and saying, get your hands off me. And being married is like having a color television set. You never want to go back to black and white.
For almost 20 years now, I've run an organization called Sound Portraits Productions in New York, which makes public radio documentaries. StoryCorps is a natural outgrowth of this work. One of the inspirations for starting the project was Ghetto Life 101, a documentary we produced in the Ida B. Wells housing projects in Chicago. In 1993, we gave two 13-year-olds tape recorders and asked them to interview their friends and families and record a week in their lives. In this excerpt, one of those young men, Lee Allen Jones, asks his grandmother, June Marie Jones, to sing her favorite gospel song.
Could you please sing that song for us?
Well, my voice all messed up.
Do it. One, two, one, two, three.
Do you remember when you walked among men? Well, Jesus, you know, if you're looking below, it's worse now than then.
June Jones died in 2002, and Lee Allen, now 26, recently talked about what it means to him to have this recording of her voice.
It will keep her here for a lifetime. It will keep her here forever.
Lord, for my sake, teach me to take one day at a time.
Sound and voice has a uniqueness about it and a quality about it that retains its own value. In that 1 minute, I got everything that she ever gave me in life, and I continue to get it every time I just cue the tape up and I hit it. And I think that, you know, if that's all I was supposed to get, then it was enough to sustain me for a lifetime.
One day at a time.
She was hoarse, but she still can blow. Thank you.
The major impetus behind starting StoryCorps was to give families the opportunity to come together and hold the conversations they've always wanted to. But I also wanted the interviews to be of historic value. We hope that someday, down the road, StoryCorps interviews will be able to transport listeners 60, 100, 200 years back in time to experience the lives and spirits of everyday Americans. This next excerpt is from another inspiration for the project, an interview conducted as part of the Works Progress Administration in the 1930s. The WPA's Monumental Oral History Project captured the stories and voices of thousands of everyday Americans across the country. Here's Harlem fish crier, Clyde Kingfish Smith.
Fish man, 5 cents a pound. Folks, I sell them all over town. Come on down and get around. My fish ain't but 5 cents a pound.
Daddy, oh, who loves his old pie?
My mama loves them, so do pie. When you folks ain't got but a dime, can't eat pork chops all the time. I know time is mighty hard. Buy a little fish and a little bit of love, daddy, yeah.
Who loves his soda pie?
My mama loves his soda pie.
Well, I usually go about and I look over my box of fish or whatever amount I have and look at the different kinds, and then I try to find words to rhyme with each kind of fish. And then in my hustling and hollering, I kind of rhyme up the words and make them fit together. So people are laughing by fish, that's all.
Do they buy more or pay?
Oh, yeah, if I can get them to laugh in a little bit, they'll kind of loosen up the pocketbook a little bit. Now, here's a song I sing when I'm in the Spanish neighborhood. It's not a song, but it's a yell more like. Pica fresco, cinco centavo, centavo libro. Pica fresco, cinco centavo libro, pal. Now, in English, that translates to fish fresh, 5 cents a pound.
That, you say that in a Spanish neighborhood, is that right?
Yes. Now, in a Spanish neighborhood, I usually sing something Spanish. And I get in a colored neighborhood, I sing something kind of swingy. I get in a Jewish neighborhood, I sing something like, buy me a Biff Duchesne.
Buy me a Biff Duchesne. Yes, old fish man again. Buy me a Biff Duchesne. I mean they grand.
Several months before StoryCorps launched, we did our first test interview with my great-uncle Sandy Birnbaum, who was then 88 years old. He spoke with me about growing up during the Depression, going off to war, and finally meeting his wife, my great-aunt Bertie, the love of his life, who passed away 6 months before this interview was recorded. Here Sandy remembers the day they met for their first date.
She says, I'll meet you in the doorway just past the liquor store. And finally, I see this vision of purple coming down the street. A purple hat and a purple coat, and I think he had purple shoes and stockings on. It was so glamorous. I says, what the hell am I, a two-bit farm boy? Like, this is such a sophisticated woman. I mean, she's way beyond me. So that's when I tried to duck out. I turned to the doorway, but the door was locked. There was no way I could escape. And I say, I've said it many times, it was a if the door was open, it would have ended there. And the best thing that... Well, anyhow, the door was locked. And we met. She wasn't nearly as highfalutin as my first impression suggested. And we had just so much fun. But that's it.
A few minutes later, I asked my Uncle Sandy what it was like for him to talk about Aunt Bertie and break down in the interview.
I hate to say this, but it's a good feeling. It's like you're trying to defend yourself, and all of a sudden you don't have to. You're just letting go. And it's a good feeling because, you know, you no longer have to act something that you don't really feel, that you're happy with everything, because you're not. And never will be.
After I interviewed Sandy, we put out a public call for pilot StoryCorps subjects, which brought in Noah Teitelbaum and his 89-year-old grandmother, Rose.
How did you meet Grandpa?
Well, my girlfriends went dancing. I was not there.
But my friend, I met her the next day. Oh, she says, we met such a group of fellas. What wonderful boys and what dancers. And there's one there that he's really outstanding. And she started to describe your grandfather. He's tall and he's got blonde red hair and he's so good looking. And she got me all riled up. I says, oh, I'm going to go to that party. And so I went, and that's how I met him.
And then as you were dating, how quickly did you realize you wanted to marry him?
Oh, very shortly. In fact, at the third date, he said to me, "If when I get a job, we'll get married. I want to get married with you."
Was that his proposal?
That was more or less his proposal. Nothing glamorous or it was just, this is what we're going to do and this is what I'd like to do.
What about your future? What does that hold for you?
Well, the future, well, I have a friend who's 93 and she says to me, Rose, when I get up in the morning, I say, gee, I'm still here. See, so the future, well, I'm looking forward. I'd like to see my grandchildren, their mate. And you know, tomorrow, if my time comes, I had a full life, a good one.
Is there something that we didn't get to?
I think we covered about everything. I guess about everything.
Well, thank you so much.
I love you.
I love you too, Rose.
Since our launch, we've continued to see families come together daily at our booth in Grand Central Terminal, proving over and over again one of our main tenets, that listening is an act of love. Here, 10-year-old Caitlin Seaver interviews her mom, Lynn, who's a lesbian.
I'm Caitlin. I'm 10, and today is the 10th, and right now I'm being interviewed by my mom, and I'm also interviewing my mom, too.
How would you describe yourself?
I describe myself as nice, beautiful, caring, can be stubborn, picky about friends.
What do you want to see yourself do when you're a grown-up? What do you imagine? What would make you happy?
I think I might want to be straight with a nice husband, and I think I would like to travel quite a bit, but of course, I don't have any idea what it's like to have kids, because I am a kid myself.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
How has being a parent changed you?
Oh my God. Being a parent has made me be much more responsible and made me really think about someone other than myself. I mean, can I tell you a little secret?
Yeah.
I used to always worry about dying. I used to have this, like, huge fear of dying.
Brain bug.
Yeah, I had this huge brain bug. And when you came into my life, the brain bug just flew out the door.
Bye-bye.
I know. And I think it really was because I stopped, like, having all this focus on myself. You know, like, me, me, me. Suddenly, there was you.
Do you really, truly love Anita?
Very much. With all my heart.
And how about me? Do you really, truly love me?
Oh, my God. With, like, my heart, the next-door neighbor's heart, the people around the corner's heart, with everything I have, I love you.
Honestly?
Honestly.
Okay. Do you want to ask me anything
else? Do you love me?
Oh, and stop it. Of course I love you.
There you go.
Each day, conversation by conversation, interview by interview, StoryCorps is collecting the stories and voices of our time. In this clip, 91-year-old Harold Slappy tells his friend Monica Esteban about visiting Harlem's Savoy Ballroom as a teenager in the 1920s and flirting with the hostesses.
They had about 10 hostesses there. If you paid 25 cents, you could dance 2 sets with them. And we used to save up our nickels and dimes and give it to our favorite hostess and spend the night dancing with her and trying to make love to her. But they say, come back in 10 years when you grow up. Hell yeah.
What is the most important thing you have learned in life?
The most important thing that I've learned in life is the foundation of all happiness is love. L-O-V-E, love and respect for your fellow man. Because if you have no love in your life, you're not living. You're not living.
Often in StoryCorps interviews, participants remember important moments in history in a very personal way. Here, Debbie Fisher tells her friend Terrence Hicks about her father, a survivor of Auschwitz.
My father was a Holocaust survivor. He had survived the same camp as Elie Wiesel. They were both the same age. And when my dad was alive and through school, I was reading Night. And I was 14 years old when I was reading it, but I had no idea that the Auschwitz that Wiesel was writing about, where he lived for a year, was the same one that my father lived in. Because my father's Auschwitz was a kinder, gentler Auschwitz. It was sort of like Robin Hood and his merry men meet the Nazis in my father's Auschwitz. There was never a moment where people were dying in front of him. The worst happened the first night, then they killed his siblings and they killed his parents. And then from that moment on, the boys took over. And that was the story we were given. But when he was very, very sick in the hospital and I knew I was losing him, I realized that there was no going back, and that if I didn't make my move, I could not return to the moment of having access to his memories. And this time he was really tired and he wasn't feeling well. And I said, I need to ask you about your time there in Auschwitz. I need to ask you some things, Dad. It's important. And I remember he looked at me and he had real anger in his face and in his eyes. He said, you know, Debbie, from the time that you were a young girl, you always asked your questions. And I always told you, we got food, we got bread, we divided it up, we didn't suffer. It was fine. And you keep bothering me and asking me the question. And I keep telling you, as if I'm in a room, go away. Stop knocking on the door. I do not want to let you in this room. And yet you keep coming back saying, let me in. And he said, so I'll ask you one more time to go away. And if you knock again, I'll let you in. But if I let you in this room, you will never, ever get out. So, do you want to knock again and come in? And I said, yes, I do, Dad. And he was crying. And I remember he had covers on his body because he was really skinny and very, very weak. And he kicked all the covers off as if he was kicking down a door. And he said, fine, come in then. Come into a room that you can never leave. Come in. And then I said, can I ask you my questions? He said, you're in the room. You can ask anything. And I asked him everything that I ever wanted to ask. I asked him to tell me the real story. And he did. It was painful and scary and sickening. I felt a part of me had died. And he's right. Once you're in that room, you can't get out. It's always with you.
We've found that a microphone gives participants a license to talk about topics they wouldn't otherwise discuss, and a story booth provides a safe space to do it in. Amy Schumer, a waitress in Grand Central Terminal who often walked by the story booth there, decided to interview her younger sister, Kim, about Kim's history of self-mutilation.
My name is Kim. I'm 18 years old, and my sister Amy is interviewing me.
And I'm 22 years old. What is your memory of the most afraid you've ever been?
Probably when I went to the hospital for the first time.
And why were you there?
At that point, I was actively cutting myself, self-mutilation.
You have an anniversary.
Yeah.
Every month.
Next month, on the 22nd, it'll be 3 years since I've cut myself. It was the hardest thing that I've ever had to do, and it continues to be the hardest thing that I do. It wasn't until the first time I tried to stop that I realized how addicting and how addicted to it I was. I would be in the shower, and I would get an urge to do it, and when I would be like, okay, I'm not going to do it, I would get sick, and I would throw up, and my arm would start tingling, and I would go through physical withdrawal from it. I've been real close to committing suicide 2 times in my life, and both times, the only reason at the time when I was really going to that I didn't is because of you, and it's because of Mom, and I could never, ever do that to either of you, because no matter how bad things get with me, I love you.
Who is your best friend?
You.
Soulmate?
You.
Idol?
You.
How would you describe our relationship?
Our relationship is beyond words. It's like, I love my sister, we share clothes. Like, no, we share our souls. Anything can go wrong in my life. Anything can go wrong. And I'll be 100% fine if I know that you're there.
Me too. Me too, me too. I love you.
I love you so much.
Thank you. I leave you with one final clip from our flagship booth in Grand Central Terminal. Michael Wolmitz and Deborah Bracars, boyfriend and girlfriend, interview one another.
So what was the most emotionally painful thing that ever happened?
Thinking about it takes my breath away. But my father passing away, of course, just over 2 years ago. And he was the closest person to me. It was sudden, and he was supposed to pick me up from the airport in New York. And I got to the airport, and I called my house, and my mother said, you know, your aunt's going to pick you up. Obviously, I could detect something in her voice. There's no way that you could hide that. And I was like, tell me what it is. My mother said, I don't want to tell you like this. And I was like, tell me. You have to tell me. Tell me. And she told me that he died in the middle of the night. I stood there and watched the bags go around the carousel. And I waited for my bag, and I went outside, and I got in my aunt's car. And I felt like no other time in my life. So this is the ring that my father gave to my mother, and we can leave it there. And he saved up, and he purchased this, and he proposed to my mother with this. And so I thought that I would give it to you so that he could be with us for this also. So I'm going to share a mic with you right now, Deborah. Where's the right finger? Deborah, will you please marry me?
Yeah, of course. I love you.
So, kids, this is how your mother and I got married, in a booth in Grand Central Station, with my father's ring. My grandfather was a cab driver for 40 years, used to pick people up here every day, so it seems right.
Major funding for StoryCorps comes from AT&T and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. StoryCorps is a project of Sound Portraits Productions in partnership with NPR and the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. To find out more about StoryCorps, including how you can participate, visit StoryCorps.net. I'm Dave Isay.